check it out now.
All right, we're live on Twitter. The Beating the Book Podcast NFL Draft Betting Preview Episode. 2026 NFL Draft, 1 week away. The first round of the NFL Draft, 1 week away from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's Gil Alexander. Thanks for tuning in. If you miss any part of this, we'll have it in pod form, of course. A esteemed panel to try to make sense of this draft for me. I feel like 1 week out, I have less of a grasp of this draft than I do of anyone in recent memory. If we're on a four square thing here above me, you follow him on Twitter at Vegas Refund. He actually moves markets when he releases his NFL draft plays. He moves markets when he releases his plays for any draft, really, is Luke Swain. Luke, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me. Pretty sensitive market for what it's worth.
Pretty well, true, but you do have more sway and have a great track record on this. Drew Dinsick joins us, of course, Whale Capper, the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcasts, which he does with Andy Molitor and Jay Croucher, respectively. Drew, what's happening?
Nothing bad. Even more than Luke moving markets, he's getting offshore markets taken off the board as soon as we go
live. Yes.
Oh, it's his
Thanks,
fault.
Luke. Yeah. And then a new addition to the NFL Draft Pod. Of course, he's been on this pod many times talking NFL, but I wanted to have him on because the man knows some people, and he might know some stuff that we don't know. Chris Felica, the Bear from Fox Sports. Christopher?
Sir, what's going on? Good?
How you doing, man? Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
I'm going cool, of course. Looking forward to it. Yeah. What Drew was just saying, though, he's right. I literally have like one site in the offshore world that has a decent amount of stuff up. But yeah, it's pretty much slim pickings right now. And I have probably as few bets as I've had in the draft. And I have heard some things. So hopefully some of these things pop up and we can potentially take advantage of what we think we might know.
Yeah, this is no surprise, just to give you a sort of real quick landscape of some legalized sports books. Chrissy Andrews, my Mishbucha, our buddy from the South Point, he texted me the other day during a numbers game on the radio side. He was supposed to go to dinner with me and Dr. Bob the night before. He said, "So disappointed I missed dinner last night. I could have bitched about the draft and even more so about these ridiculous mock drafts." So he's very excited to book anything here in this draft as well. And then Derek Stevens, who owns Circa, was on VSiN the other day, and he was just talking about how he's very open now about it. You know, Circa, which again, they position themselves as a sharp book. Their position on the draft is, listen, the only people that are betting this are people who know stuff. They're not interested. He said, Derek did, that the meeting started with what's an acceptable loss. That was the phrase used. And he sort of objected to that as the owner of the casino. And he was like, well, why are we doing this at all? So, you know, there's a thing in business called loss leader. And as bettors, we kind of hope that they offer this, but feels like less and less. But there are places still to bet these, of course, offshore. Luke, we should start with you. You were kind enough to come on the radio side the other day on a numbers game at VSiN. You have some bets. You have been adding bets. Let's start with what bets are out there that are still available, let's say, by price and by position that you have made.
So, yeah, so I definitely have the least amount of bets at this point than I've had in years past, which definitely a lot of it has to do with things just going up. I'm in New Jersey, so I have a ton of legal options, and it is slim pickings right now, where I put together a few bets for the show. I think the first one, and all the bets I put together are going to be plus money. The first one I like, and this is going to be somewhat going off of the three major mocks that came out, I want to say Wednesday, which Kuiper, Brugler, and McShay, which is super interesting to see where Kuiper and McShay have the same picks, because clearly they probably speak to the same person. But Jordan Tyson to be the second wide receiver right now, I think, is plus 150, which injuries have been an issue with him. A big day for him is tomorrow, which he has hit an individual workout coming up tomorrow, where teams are basically going to be checking him out, which should hopefully eliminate a lot of the issues these teams might have on the injuries, where with no injury concerns for him, he'd be the number one wide receiver in the class. Easy top 10 pick. So I think to be the second wide receiver, you can even take him top 10. Kuiper and McShay had him to go to the Chiefs. The Saints beat writers that I listened to, Underhill, he loves him to go 8. So there's a ton of spots. And even if he makes it to 13 at the Rams, I would not be shocked if everything goes well tomorrow for him to be taken over Lemon, assuming they go wide receiver.
Jordan Tyson to the Rams specifically?
No, so it would be Jordan Tyson to be the second wide receiver taken.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard a specific in there. Jordan Tyson goes second.
I gotta jump in and ask the obvious question. If the Saints at 8 are alive, are you sprinkling any wide receiver one?
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying to be responsible here. where wide receiver one, I don't know. But, I mean, exact pick, which would be like number 8, number 9, which I think is plus 500. Number 9, I think, is still like plus 800. Plus, first wide receiver, I mean, why not at this point? I would not tell you not to do it. But
Jordan Tyson out of ASU. Second wide receiver. I'm assuming you think Cardale Tate is the first wide receiver. Do we know that at this point?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid assumption at this point.
Yeah, okay. I would echo that based on everything that I have heard and spoken to people. Yeah, it's Tate wide receiver one is a pretty solid. Just the question is going to be, does he go under his 7.5 or over his 7.5? That's kind of the debate right now.
By the way, maybe I started in the wrong place. Drew, I mean, Luke, what do you have right now as best as you can beyond Mendoza in the top 10? If you had to mock it right now. Go to you, Luke. Who do you got?
I'm not sure I heard you.
I'm not sure Luke hears me.
I'll Luke, jump in, but the clear kind of uncertainty 1 week away about the number 2 pick is fascinating. It's been a while, I think, since we had one of these where, you know, we didn't know that the Browns were going to trade out of the second spot last year, but it was pretty obvious it was going to be Travis Hunter. It's been a while since we had this much. You know, it's a 50-50 market right now for who goes second, which is kind of interesting because it definitely changes how the next 4 picks go, whether it's Reese or Bailey, I think. And some of that just comes down to, you know, like, is there a preference for the Cardinals to have one of those two? And if the one that they covet is not available, they go offensive tackle instead. Similarly for the Titans, if the Titans covet one of those guys and then go Jeremiah Love instead. The fact that 2 is unknown kind of, to me at least, makes 3, 4 and even to a degree 5 untouchable.
So I think it's becoming somewhat of a consensus Bailey's going to, if you want to believe the quote unquote sources, where I think 3 is a spot that could create a lot of chaos, where especially if Maui Noah goes 3. Which if Maui Noah goes 3, then you have Jeremiah Love sitting there at 4. And if the Titans go Love, or you would probably assume they're going to go Arbel Reese over Jeremiah Love, who knows? Which then, does Love go 5? Probably that's a safe assumption. But if the Titans go Love at 4, then you have Arbel Reese going 5, which I haven't even looked at those odds. I'm going to guess those are pretty good. But if Maui Noah goes 3, Jeremiah Love goes 3, they trade out whatever it is. If Sonny Styles goes 3 or 4, that's where the chaos unfolds, where I guess you could say the value in the exact pick market is going to come into play. But there's a pretty strong consensus right now that it's Bailey, Arvell, Love, and then 5, I think it's Sonny Styles. But Caleb Downs has been getting a lot of love. It seems like every expert, he's their favorite player. For obvious reasons, but the positional value, of course. I don't think he's going to go that high, but the consensus is going to be, right now, is at least that order in terms of the top 5.
Well, let me just interject, because this is why I have Chris here, right, also, which is, so I have Arvell Reese plus 230 to go second. Within 48 hours, it was minus money. I was feeling great about myself. Now it's kind of coin flipping, as Drew said. But Chris, that you're not hearing necessarily that it's a done deal at 2?
Yeah, I'm not at all. I am a Jets fan. I have some pretty good connections. It's almost like Arizona has made it known that they are open for business at 3 if Bailey is available, and maybe with the Cowboys trade up for him, maybe someone trades up. I know I'm kind of circumventing here and going in a roundabout way to get to the point, but I just know, dating back to the combine, the Cardinals were basically talking. I have connections and friends who were with members of the Cardinals organization, and at the combine, all they couldn't stop talking about Jeremiah Love. And you can't take him at 3. So I think now the Cardinals are in a position where they really would like to trade back a couple spots and maybe take Love. But I think once the Jets get wind of, the Cardinals are open for business, that David Bailey is available at 3, the Jets all of a sudden, oh, we're going to take David Bailey at 2. And I think it's more about an opportunity to try and drive up interest for the number 2 pick in the draft between Bailey with other teams. It would not, unfortunately, I'm in the state of Connecticut, so I cannot see what an accurate price is right now on our Lawrence to go 2nd. But I'd like to have a little Arvell Reese, number 2 pick right now in my pocket. That's for sure. I think it's far from a foregone conclusion that Bailey is the pick at 2.
Yeah, okay. Let me get a couple of thoughts in here. So number one, I think if in the past, the offshore landscape where you could get multiple $1,000s a click on a position was sort of the compass rose for this sort of, a week out, we're making kind of commentary about this. A lot of that is informed by, hey, I happened to be watching the screen and I just saw somebody click 10 times on this thing. And that's not happening this year just because of the way that they're like being so, relatively protective of the market. So then you have to look at these prediction markets, I think, to get the signal this year. There's been, 1.3 million matched in the number 2 overall pick market on Kelce as an example. Not that I'm endorsing Kelce, far from it, but it's 1.3 million is a non-trivial amount of money matched in this market. And right now they're dealing 50-50. Right. And so it is notable to me that the intelligentsia in the draft, mock draft world is all saying Bailey, right? But the market, this relatively liquid market, is 50-50, I think is notable. And the kind of couple things that I would tend to kind of throw a challenge flag in the narrative around this pick. Number one, people being like, well, Aaron Glenn needs to save his job, so taking a guy like Bailey who can make an immediate impact makes more sense than Reese, who's a project. The idea that he has any say in this is laughable. The Jets are very clearly pointing to the 2027 draft to get their quarterback and start the rebuild, probably without Aaron Glenn. And so the idea that, they would make a pick to try to, offer him some sort of lifeline is laughable, in my opinion. And, to the degree that they think Reese has a higher upside if he's developed correctly, shouldn't surprise anyone. I do a week or two ago, whenever we were talking about this pick, Gil, and I was like, I don't know, man. Like, Arvell Reese was minus 300 at the time. And I was like, that's way too much certainty. No freaking way he should be that high, right? Like, there should be some prices of it, but I felt like the same kind of paradigm existed when Bailey was minus 170 or minus 200 or whatever he was, earlier this week. Like, the only guy who knows is Moogie. Moogie's not telling anyone. If stuff is, trickling out and getting back to the Daniel Jeremiahs and the Bruglers of the world who are kind of putting Bailey too, it's probably from the coaching staffs, and it's probably from the, they're much more kind of their preference, which happens to be confirmation bias for guys like Daniel Jeremiah, who had Bailey as his second guy, right? He's like, well, yeah, he's the second best in my opinion. And these Jets coaches telling me they're preferring Bailey. So this all makes sense. So I'm going to keep him at 2.
Like, I think too, Drew, sorry to cut you off, but I think with a lot of these, I don't want to say everyone does it. We know in this industry, in this business, there's a give and take. There's a, you have my back, you scratch my back, I'll scratch
yours.
There's GM, and who's to say that Moody's not throwing out there to whomever? Oh yeah, we're good. But yeah, give us Bailey 2nd. We're good with that. And clearly Bailey's could not convince that Bailey's going to be the pick. By the way, on Kelce as well, there is a market. There isn't a ton in there. It's only $24,000. players to be taken in the top three. I think David Bailey to be taken in the top three might be worth the play, because if the Jets don't take him at two, you would certainly think that there would be some movement at the third pick to come up and take him.
Yeah, see, let's talk about that for a second.
Go ahead.
The most unusual thing that happened with those three drafts that Luke mentioned was that all three of them had Dallas trading up for a defensive player.
I know.
And that, we're getting a little too cute. Everybody had that? Okay, interesting. Like, let's see, why would that be? Well, number one, they all had a moving up to six to take Sonny Styles, right? Was that right? And yeah. It was like, okay, well, yeah, like, if I had to guess what that is, my guess is that, Jerry Jones, relatively shrewd businessman, sees that it's a buyer's market for trades and probably called up two, three, and six and was like, I'll give you 12 and a third this year to move up, you know? And they're like, well, we got an offer. we could tell people Cowboys called us, because there's right now it's a one-way problem where everybody who's at the top wants to move down and try to see if they can in any way, shape, or form score like the Rams did with the Falcons last year. But that was such, like, we're living in the shadow of that being such a bad trade that the idea of anyone giving up 27, particularly now that everybody's kind of already turned the page and is looking at how good that class is, I just don't think it's going to happen. And so, you know, maybe there will be some discounted trade ups that we do end up seeing. But my gut is that Cowboys probably tried to lowball a bunch of teams to trade up. And that's what's kind of informing this. Well, the Cowboys are moving up. You know, they're willing to move up. But I'll kind of believe when I see it that they're going to give up the farm for any of these guys.
I think, too, just because you're talking about trades, I think we're going to see teams with teams that have solid quarterback situations moving forward. I think they obviously are more apt to move up, because next year you want as much capital for next year in what will be a much better quarterback. If Arch Manning were in this draft, he would be the number one pick without a question of a doubt. So, like, you're going to have Arch, you're going to have Dante Moore, you may have Darian Mensah, you may have Julian Sain. You're going to have a bunch of guys next year who grade out probably much higher than this quarterback draft. So quarterback needy teams are not going to really want to give up any 27 capital, because next year you're going to want to have as much ammo as you can.
Mm-hmm. I get final prediction, and then I'm kind of out of gas on these top four, because again, this is a guessing game at this point. I think the Jets take Reese two. I think there's a world where Titans and Cardinals flip flop 3-4. Titans take Bailey, who fits perfectly with what Salah wants, and then the Cardinals get something and save a little bit of face, take a running back like that. That feels like the right how this ultimately works out.
I mean, in that scenario, I'd be betting Maui Noah to go four, which I'm gonna guess are crazy odds right now.
Interesting.
I mean, just what this all scenario.
What this all speaks to, though, Drew, and what you were saying is, I think I said this to you the other day, which is, I have no way of knowing if what I'm saying is true, but I feel like every year I could rely on mock drafts. Like, I figure, like, hey, when Daniel Jeremiah is ready to put out his draft, this is well-researched. There's a lot of intel available, and this is why he's putting out what he's putting out. And that applies to everybody. This year, I feel like it's just been an assignment for them, and that whatever the mock drafter is, it's like, okay, I got to put out 2.0, 3.0, and 4.0, space them out before the actual draft begins. I truly have no freaking idea what's actually going to happen, but I have to submit these exercises. That's the sense I get. I can't tell you why that's the sense, but that is, my spider senses are tingling on that. And that's what worries me so much about it. And I think what you're saying, Drew, is right. I didn't mean to put you in a bad mood on that, Luke, by saying,
no,
I'm not sure it's Bailey, because I have Bailey going to it. Yeah. You know,
I also think we might be in a unique cycle this year with the scrutiny of journalism integrity and just, let's just say that there may be some people that have gotten emails specifically that felt a little bit targeted about company policies about betting that I think that there is like a sincere kind of fear and cloud around some of this stuff. And honestly, these guys who we hold up as far as the draft intelligentsia, they don't really have any consequences when they're super duper wrong.
No.
These guys are locked
right.
in. So like a little bit of the incentive structure of being the right, the most correct, like it's kind of waning.
Kind of waning. That said, since we're here and we're trying to make some money, Luke, let's go back to you for a second. And I know Drew has one that he's all in on, but give me another one, Luke, that you love or other few ones that you have for people to bet that's still available.
Others I wrote down, I think Panthers to go first position of the Panthers draft. I think O-line, which right now at +350 is a good bet. I think the favorite right now is wide receiver, which it's really like if wide receiver was +350, that would probably be the bet. But like if I was making a mock right now, I think 19 for maybe Blake Miller or maybe Blake Miller would be the guy I'd be putting there for a mock. But that's somewhat of the sweet spot for the tackles where the Panthers GM came out basically saying they're going to take a wide receiver, offensive lineman, or a safety. I can't bet on a safety and the values in O-line and the guys that I think are available make way more sense than what the wide receivers are. So Panthers at +350 to take an offensive lineman first. I think Eagles to take an O-line, which is just +115 right now. I think it's a pretty good bet. Everyone knows how he takes the premium positions. That's another sweet spot for the offensive lineman. I think the receivers that might make sense for them, Jordan Tyson's a pretty popular pick. I don't think he's going to be there anymore. And then I just think the O-linemen that are going to be available there are way more valuable than the wide receivers, whether it's Casey or Cooper. Cooper probably won't. So +115, it's not going to be fun odds, but I think that's a pretty good bet. And then the last two I've written down, and these are second corner to be taken. I think Chris Johnson out of San Diego State, I think he's 10-1 right now. Those were way better a couple days ago, but seems like McCoy is falling and falling pretty fast based off of recent reports of him running a great 40, but the drills weren't so good in terms of like his agility, which seems like teams have taken off his board. McCoy could fall. Johnson is a riser where McCoy to be the second corner at 10-1. I wouldn't probably take it much lower than that, which is probably going to happen as we get off this. It's a good bet. And then this one is crazy. I think Dylan Thienemann to be the second safety, which I think is 20-1 right now. I know nothing. This is more just a guy that has basically everything that you checks every single box is the name brand that Downs is. But if we're talking basically physical traits, he has everything to go higher than probably what he's projected. Which Downs is pretty much the opposite. Doesn't have the physical traits, but has the name brand, has basically the resume that every draft expert is absolutely in love with. And if Downs falls to, let's say, 12, who knows? I can see Dylan going ahead of him. And that would just be another value play that I wouldn't expect to win, but who knows?
Do you still like
five for you? So
no, I like it. Do you still like, you gave these out on the Ray side. Do you still like Bears to go offensive lineman first?
At the odds that we talked about on Monday, yes, it came down. I think it's 4-1 now. I mean, 4-1 is still fun. I think that's still an okay bet. Where I think it should be at least the second favorite, but D line should definitely be favored.
Okay. So. Yeah, it was 7-1 when we talked about that.
I wouldn't give it
day.
Out at 4-1 if I was just talking about it for the first time now.
You still like the only tight end expected to be drafted in the first round is Kenyon Sadiq from Oregon. You still like him paired with the Rams?
So it was like somewhat of like a gut bet that I'm going back to the Rams wanting Bowers, and then you finding out that they really wanted Bowers and tried to trade back down for him, but they just couldn't get it done. Where like the Rams need a playmaker, receiver is the mocked position for them 9 times out of 10. And Sadiq like shocking the world going 13, like I can see. So yes, I still like it based off of really nothing other than what the Rams need and their past history of looking for a guy like Bowers, which Sadiq is probably the closest thing to Bowers since he was drafted.
You like under plus 140 his draft position of 15.5 more, if I'm not mistaken.
So that is, I thought you were speaking to Rams to take Sadiq, which was like, I think it was like 8-1.
I'm just, okay.
And I think Sadiq under right now, it got steamed yesterday. There were reports, okay. I think the Ravens GM came out talking about how they're trying to add multiple tight ends, which, I mean, I wouldn't go running betting the under on Sadiq based off of that press conference, because if you're drafting multiple tight ends, to me, if you take one in the first round, probably doesn't make sense to double down. But his over was heavily juiced, and now that the juice is on the under, it's still bettable. But at minus 130, I think it is right now, probably wouldn't be a bet for me.
I got him yesterday at under 15.5 plus 140. I mean, the juice is moving quick.
That makes total sense. Absolutely.
And then under one, and last one here, real quick for you, Luke, for now, under 1.5 quarterbacks, you do not believe that Ty Simpson is going in the first round. It's still a pretty affordable juice on that one.
I will never bet the over I will never bet the over. And I like the under specifically for this one. QBs have come out of nowhere in past drafts, and like mock drafts over the last 2 days have all of a sudden put Ty Simpson in the first round. I don't see it. I really don't. I know it's a weaker class, but betting the over, you're basically banking on a trade happening in the back of the first round, which we literally live in a cycle of this draft is going to have the most trades ever, and then there's none. And like when the trade number comes out, just bet the under, because there's always less than they think there are. It just builds up hype, especially in a draft that has no QBs and they're just trying to get attention to it. But yeah, the under 1.5, I just don't see Ty Simpson going in the first round right now. Cardinals seems like somewhat of a lock for them to get him where that is. Who knows? But yes, I would still support the under 1.5.
Drewski, I know you got you're pretty straightforward on a couple of these.
So much to react to there. But let's start with Ty Simpson because you just mentioned it. I do like under 1.5. I feel like, it's already moved 60 cents. It's moved a lot. But the idea of there was a kind of a moment where I was like, well, yeah, the teams that are kind of interested in really, they really love them. It was like the Browns really love them and the Jets really love them and the Cardinals, the Browns and Jets specifically. I was like, well, if those teams really love them, then I guess it really does suck. The general kind of sense that I got was that that was his agent kind of pushing that sort of stuff out there. And then him going to the draft the night of is kind of oh yeah, we got a promise from a team. You know, they're gonna get him in the first round here to try to generate some feeling of urgency from one of those teams at the top of the second to make feel like they have to get into the bottom of the first to avoid whoever he's been whatever promise is out there. But I think all that smells like agent nonsense to me. So I'm gonna happy to be on the fading side of that. Although it wouldn't be, as kind of Luke mentioned, wouldn't be the first time I was on the wrong side of this bet. I'll tread carefully. I ended up getting pretty, kind of annoyed and bored at not having liquidity offshore to bet this. So between Tuesday when we talked and today, I finally just bit the bullet and dumped on Kelce. And I'm doing effectively, I've been mostly intrigued and enjoying the kind of the Rufus Peabody approach to this, which is, oh my God, I could be the no liquidity on a bunch of these otherwise one-way markets that exist for top 10. This is awesome. And the most obvious one that I'm now, I won't say I need this, but it's going to make or break for me is Jermod McCoy, no top 10. Most of what I'm into that for is around 75 cents. It's at 95 cents right now. I think it should be at 99 cents. I don't understand how anyone is going to, take such a leap with a player who has such a clear and obvious red flag injury wise. It was fascinating that his stock got propped up by a good 40, which was straight line running. And then you ask, well, how about the drills? How about the lateral mobility? Because it was an ACL, and everybody's like, oh yeah, not good. It's like, well,
I mean, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, he was almost the favorite to be the first corner.
Yeah, and, wild.
You know, a lot of it was just based off of that 40 time. And like, I just don't understand how like this, these lateral reports didn't come out at the same time where, I mean, he was getting heavily mocked ahead of Delaney, where it's totally flipped. And I'm surprised it hasn't moved more to what you were just saying. But
Totally. I mean, we're finally there. Brute forced it.
Caesar has an over-under for him at 10.5, and the over is, I think, minus 500 right now.
Yeah, that's a good British jumper. The more kind of conversation, like, I don't have a landing spot for him. I haven't heard anyone be like, yes, he's not getting past a blank, right? Like, you hear that about Caleb Downs. For some reason, every single person is putting Caleb Downs in that 10th spot to the Bengals. Like, the Bengals have already kind of turned in their card for a safety in the top 10. Okay.
And yet yesterday, not to interject, but yesterday I got Caleb Downs over 9.5, Bengals draft 10th, right? At plus 164 at Bookmaker, which was interesting because I think, Luke, you released that. It moved to 10.5. You're like, no, don't bet it over 10.5. And then yesterday, for some reason, it was back to 9.5 over plus 164. Yeah. So I thought that was weird.
Yeah, there were a bunch of reports coming out. I think it was maybe like Schrager, basically somewhat pumping him to the Giants and his floor being 10, which was definitely, it was very like, Downs was like the talk of the day, I want to say, on like Tuesday or Wednesday, where like all of a sudden his stock was rising. But
deja vu from Kyle Hamilton, right?
Yep. Lombardi's line about Kyle Hamilton? What position is he going to play? What's he going to do?
There's certainly a lot of the Kyle Hamilton type of smoke. There's injury concern smoke around Downs. I think there are reasons to expect that he could fall out of the top 9. I don't think there's a sincere landing spot for him in the top 9. I think there's too many other good players to take a risk there. Which means I don't know where his end was. And Schrager was basically like, oh, he won't be there at 12.
Yeah, wow. Those are the things
that could mean 10 or 11. Like, there, you know, there's certainly outs there. So if ultimately, like, if this is a lot of, like, I know he is very well liked and, you know, has a lot of good connections. And the Ohio State program has a very good record of getting, you know, having their, you know, their highly touted prospects, you know, protecting their, you know, their status throughout this process. So it could be just a matter of like the machine, like really trying to, you know, keep him from having a free fall. But again, like it's a talented safety year, guys. It's a non-premium position. He's got an injury red flag. I think Luke's kind of general original take here was the right one, and we'll see if it plays out. But the cornerback market is more interesting to me for sure, because I feel like the gap between Delaney and CB2 is much broader than people realize. When you have that type of gap between the best in the class and the next best, that is a bit of a premium, pushes the guy up. I don't know if you guys watched much NFL last year. A lot of teams need cornerbacks. there is some very, very poor secondary play going on. And actually, this is like the third or fourth weak cornerback draft we've had, right? Like there's definitely a little bit of a cornerback desert going on broadly. So somebody reaching for, you know, Delaney makes sense to me. Him going anywhere from, I think, probably 7 through, you know, through 12 is probably his hard floor. But CB2 is wide open.
You're all in.
Delaney first cornerback, I think, is a good bridge jumper. no top 10 on McCoy is a good bridge jumper. And then under 4.5 CBs, I think, is pretty good, too.
That's what I was going to ask.
I'm not sure who the fifth cornerback
is. I wanted to look at taking over 4.5 at like plus 325, I think it was. And then I'm like, I don't know who the fifth one's going to be. But like the back end of the first round, like the cornerback is always like a good default. Like, oh, yeah, we can always use a corner. Let me take one of them. But I just don't know who it's going to be.
It'd probably be Avion Terrell.
Yeah. His first round price is melted, though.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's definitely going in the wrong direction. And he like pulled his hamstring and ran a 4.6. Terrell was, he was like early 20s at the start of this entire process. And now don't even see him anywhere in the first. So he would be the fifth if there is a fifth based off of like what I'm saying. But yeah.
The Chris Johnson note that you had on CB2, I think was probably, that's going to go down as what I'll remember the most from this draft if it hits, because the prices were pretty absurd. And when you looked at the, you know this because, and people say this, that like a lot of the top 30 visits, is about kind of doing a medical evaluation on a guy that you didn't get to, you know, kind of poke and prod with your medical team, right? But that's also, there's another purpose served, which is if there's a guy who you kind of identify late as, oh, wait, this guy might be a guy we need to do a little bit more diligence on that we didn't at the combine, like those guys get invited all over the place, right? Like Chris Johnson is that guy this year, like six visits with teams between 20 and 32. Like that to me tells me that a lot of people kind of were late to the party on him and his potential upside, and that there's going to be a little bit of an arms race to get him as sort of the steal among the cornerbacks. And so him still plus 750, 10 to 1. If that price is still around for CB2 for him, I think that's worth a flyer. And if that hits, that'll be the one that I remember from this draft.
It was 30 to 1 a couple days ago for what it's worth.
Yeah.
What is it now for Johnson, second quarterback?
Plus 750-ish.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Can I present a dissenting argument?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Simpson? Chris Felica tells us how wrong we all are.
Yes. Ty Simpson. Who's the team?
The Rams.
The Rams.
I think there is some Rams 16 to 1 to take a quarterback with their resume.
At 13?
I don't think it would be at 13. I think they would be hoping that a team would be looking to come up and they would be coming back and maybe they can acquire a couple of picks and still get the guy that they want. But I think it's a perfect situation for Simpson. You go there behind Matthew Stafford, who is in his final year or two, doesn't have to play right away. I'm just, as a college football guy at heart, I'm just trying to put myself in his position. He turned down a shit ton of money from a couple of very high profile schools. I believe Oregon, I believe Miami, to go to the NFL draft. He had to have had some type of first round promise, right, situation type deal to turn down the type of money that he had. So I know you probably have to get in front of the Jets or get in front of the Cardinals there at the top of the second round, but I think he's going to go in the first round, and it would not surprise me if the Rams were the team to take a shot at him. So I know you can get a pretty good price on Rams first pick to be a quarterback.
I got to tell you what, I think the Jets and the Cardinals are both going to punt QB, and sure, the Rams might be able to just wait and let him come to him, which is fun because there is a team to draft Ty Simpson, and second choice right now is the Rams.
Right, yeah, they're now look what you guys have said. Personally, could be it. Last year, we all thought, or most people thought, there was going to be a spot for Shador, whether it was going to be the Steelers or whomever. And then the year before that, like nobody saw the Rams being the team to come up and take Michael Penix. Like we could be in a position with that for Ty Simpson this year, with his a team that nobody really sees coming to take Ty Simpson. I don't know. I'm just trying to connect the dots for a really good landing spot that makes sense, that might be a little bit off the beaten path, try and find somebody. I think he's going to go in the first round. I do.
Are you suggesting that the Rams do not believe Stetson Bennett is their quarterback of the future?
I would probably go into the assumption that, yes, Stetson Bennett would not be the quarterback of the future. Correct.
It's interesting. Yeah. Are you hearing any similar things? Because you're right. I mean, I think what Drew was saying is I don't feel like there's a lot of definite, like, remember drafts in the past, we knew like Najee Harris was going to go to Pittsburgh at 24, right? Or whatever. Remember that draft? Where it was like, we just knew, we knew not much, but we knew that, and it happened. Do we have a player in a team that are just so inextricably linked this year?
Probably Dylan Fien, I can't pronounce his name, to go to the Vikings, the safety. Yeah.
That's a hard floor for him.
The other interesting one that I have heard, and I heard about it weeks ago, and I think this week Jordan Reed from ESPN kind of put it out there. Obviously, Jeff Schwartz, offensive lineman who I do my podcast with, he's got a lot of connections within the offensive line, scouting and development and draft training personnel. There is a lot of steam and a lot of buzz with Proctor to the Browns. Now, again, like Luke was saying, with potentially Simpson to the Rams, would it be at 13? Maybe not. Would Caden Proctor be the sixth overall pick in the draft? I find that hard to believe, but the Browns have definitely been connected and certainly are doing their due diligence and are intrigued with Caden Proctor as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, staying on O-line. There's going to be a lot of them in round one. I don't think there's a lot of certainty as to who lands where, which is why it's weird that there is sort of a lot of people linking Caleb Lomu to the Niners. A lot. there could be a better player available, but there's still like a lot of mocks have kind of plugged him as the Niners guy, which raised my eyebrows.
Is there an updated draft position number on Monroe Freeling?
19.5.
So it's come down quite a bit. Okay, because I had heard the same thing, that he was really kind of in a little bit of a free fall. Like, people think he's got the development tools, but right now his experience is lacking. That feels right about in the right area.
Who do we think the first offensive lineman drafted is? Freeling, Fano? Who do we think?
No, I think it'll be Malgoa.
Maui Goa.
I think it'll be CeCe.
Huh.
Yeah, and then the two other like strong consensus are going to be like Mekhi Lemon to go to the Rams, and then be Caden Proctor. And this is mainly based off of Jeremiah, I want to say last week on one of his podcasts, saying he's like hearing that the Lions love Caden Proctor, which now every mock has the Lions drafting Caden Proctor at 17. But Mekhi Lemon at 13, and that would be probably the other super strong consensus based off of the mocks, which is over under is 13.5. Go figure. But
is the Jeremiah Love story, it's either the Titans at 4. Well, you actually brought up some, I think, before the Titans, didn't you, Drew, earlier, if I'm not mistaken? Did you say the Cardinals or Chris?
Thinking if the Cardinals covered him, but are unwilling to take him third. And they manage to trade down kind of in that upper cluster. I could see them landing him in the 4 or 5 range. But
as the order is now, I view it as Titans 4, if somehow he gets by the Titans at 4, Giants 5, and the only other team, and I think the floor, if we're talking about floors, Washington, despite having acquired Rashad White in free agency and Jerome Ford in free agency, I still feel like they would take Love at 7 if he somehow lasts there. I don't think there's any chance he gets below that. Do we think there's a possibility? Because remember, early on, it was the Chiefs at 9, but I think those days are gone. And I recently saw another Chiefs 9 come up with him. So that's the one sort of theme of this of these bets for me also is, it's sort of like when Dr. Bob releases a play, if you don't get it right then and it goes away from you, wait a little while, it might come back. I feel like that's been the story with this draft.
With Love, and it's weird to me because last year I was pretty like I was taking some big swings at some big plus money who's the Boise State kid, Genty, that Genty was that he didn't actually have a home and that he was going to slide, but down the Raiders. Yeah, Raiders ultimately take him 6, and it was like, well.
It was Mason Graham.
20 something to 1 to go.
But to your point there, Drew, that to me was amazing. Like, I never for one second believed. I was like, the Raiders aren't good enough to draft a running back at 6, no matter how good they think they are. But that's how I feel about the Titans too, right, at 4.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's scope for Love to go 3, 4, 5, or 7. if he slides past seven, I think, is there someone that would just say, you know, F it, I'm coming up for him, maybe. I don't even know who that team is, though. Like, it's unclear to me if there's if there is free fall potential for him. It seems like the consensus is he's a top two or three player in this draft, and usually like water finds its level. Yeah, I, you know, 3-5-6, 3-4-5-7. You want a 25% chance he falls in any of those three slots? I think that's probably reasonable.
Yeah, Chris, any other bets you made?
Yeah, I think something that's still available. I'm looking at some of the things that I have played, and they've moved, like, positions have moved a couple of spots. Like Concepcion has moved a couple of spots. I have an under on him, an under on Tiedemann that's moved a position since I played that. To go in the first round, I still see TJ Parker at like -160. I think an edge rusher like that in the later part of the first round feels pretty good. I think Parker's going to go in the first round. He didn't have a great year at Clemson this year, but he has an NFL type ready body. So I would still be interested in Parker at -165, -160 to go in the top 10. I've heard rumblings on Zion Young to go in the first round. He's plus money to do so. If you're looking further down the board, in trying to maybe play quarterback, dart throw, bingo. I know the Steelers have been doing a lot of due diligence on Carson Beck as well. So there could be a marriage there potentially in the third or fourth round between the Steelers and Carson Beck. If you're looking to play a couple of those, the Besantis, he's going first round now. That price is completely out of hand. What else do I got here that still might be in the available type range?
What's interesting also, I've heard less of, I know we said earlier, under 4.5 cornerbacks, because we can't figure out who a fifth is. But I feel like I've heard less of those markets also this year. No one really knows about offensive alignment or anything else. No one has real conviction on wideout. Remember, usually there's a big, you know, discussion about that, but I don't feel like we have a lot of handle on that. Am I right? That those seem a little more vague this year?
Yeah, it seems that. I know there is speaking of the cornerbacks, I have seen a second quarterback selected. I know we're talking about that. McCoy is -200 to be that. I mean, is someone really going to take either John CJ or someone else? But we'll see. You got a great number on that. So that's a it's amazing to think that CJ to be going the first round was as long as he was just a week ago.
Yeah, I feel if you put an over-under up for CJ right now, it's like probably 23.5-ish.
Well, there is one. It's 32.5.
Oh, 32.5? Who has that?
God. It's basically just to go in the first round. CJ Johnson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to go first round.
Yeah. That's a surprise.
Where is that, Luke?
-800 or -900 probably. That's
we're talking about Chris Johnson, right?
The Chris Johnson, yes. The corner.
Yeah, his over-under is basically the first round odds, which it was 32.5. I mean, the under is like super juice now.
It's so funny. The one offshore that I have that has a good bit of number drafted in round one, Chris Johnson, not available.
Not available. Imagine surprise.
A lot of lockouts this year.
I think the offensive line thing is interesting just because there are no clear surefire left tackles, right? Like that's really why it's such a question mark this year, is that like, okay, are you going to take elite guys who are playing, you know, guard or maybe converting to center or your right tackle? And those guys, you know, that they could, that is very much your mileage may vary in terms of how you have them rated. But you can sidestep that with Niners first position drafted is +115 for offensive linemen. That looks good to me.
I think it's like a lot of the first position have been like just beat down, where they have first position for the Jags, the Falcons, and the Broncos. All three of those teams don't have first round picks. So we're talking about volatility.
Oh, yeah.
And basically their first pick in this bet being based off of, I think the Broncos have the 63rd pick in the second round. I mean, honestly, you could literally just bet on like
What's the biggest number?
In terms of odds, and like I wouldn't say that's wrong. Where like in the Packers, and like the Packers don't have a first round pick, which I was looking at like Packers to draft a linebacker at like 35-1 a couple days ago.
That's actually kind of good.
Which like they have the 62nd pick. So
there's some good round two linebackers.
What was that?
There's some good round two linebackers.
That's not a bad bet at all. Like, it gets way more volatile when you get to the end of the first, especially in the second round, where like there being a clear favorite to me is just lines moving off of bets, and basically no one, like, there's just value. That's where like the quote unquote value is going to lie, at least for me.
So Luke likes Broncos kicker, punter, long snapper, 200-1.
That's right. Let's go.
There's some good long snappers in this draft. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know that. I guess, the general kind of the spirit that at my mind, I think everyone should probably have a similar mindset at this point. There are very, very few information locks. This is an information market. Anything that you are really kind of getting seriously involved in right now should be more like a lottery ticket than it is like, I believe Bailey is the better player and I've seen him mocked now second overall 5 times. I'm going to put my sincere stake on him at 50, minus 100, minus 115 or something like that. Like that is foolish. And, this is the amount of uncertainty in 2 through 5 compounds. Like, yes. That trickles into the later stages of the first round. It's kind of funny that, I guess not really funny. I mean, I've never run a book, never operated a market like this. But I feel like when you have this much uncertainty and people are betting based off of whims because they're bored and they miss the NFL, like, these are the type of years that you kill the players. And I'm surprised they're not offering more.
One big dump soon. A lot of the books are holding back on what they put out, and I mean, I'm crossing my fingers that in a lot of the books post new odds at the same times during the day. So like specific time I'm on like this book, and then another specific time on that book, and like it's just getting super frustrating. I'm just.
Yeah. The best here's my best piece of advice. Like, watch the prediction markets, watch the moves of size in, you can do this homework now. Look at the draft prediction markets and see where there is liquidity available, and then be prepared when that gets snapped up. That's going to be signal that actual information is leaking. Because right now, very, very little actual information has hit the market, in my opinion.
It's great. That's great.
Is that a misstatement? You guys think that's
great advice, I think. Drew, you're down on the prediction markets, by the way. I'm a little upset about it. You're down.
I mean, I lived through the offshore betting space, getting all of my accounts getting frozen when Black Friday happened, million years ago. And it's like, I definitely could. I also live in California, where I feel like the likelihood of some legal shenanigans ultimately getting accounts frozen feels real. The idea that this is just going to be, this unregulated marketplace here is, seems too good to be true. So, I'm involved though, because I got bored on Tuesday. I didn't have anywhere else to fire.
Not to make this into a discussion about that, but I believe that because it's under the auspices of the Commodities Exchange and that the president has his son on the board of two, not only that, but because it's a federal as opposed to state by state, I feel like they're both here to stay. Polymarket and Kalshi and whoever follows. But just an opinion. We'll see. One more question here.
At what point is it worth a flyer or a shot on going under 8.5 on Ruben Bainge? Do we think that's just throwing money away? Because the over is like -$3 now or something like that, because of the report coming out and Is it worth taking a shot that someone like the Saints take him at eight, or someone else under that? Like, you got a plus price on a really good football player. Like, I don't know. Do we think it's just he's got no shot going either better?
I don't hate it at this point. A lot of that steam was coming from, like, the majority of that steam was off of the reports that came out about that incident, but it really hasn't moved since. Probably, I would not say no to a plus money bet on a guy like that at the odds that they are right now. I think the Commanders, there's a scenario where the Commanders possibly, I think Titans are totally out for sure. And the Saints are definitely his best landing spot, which you're going to see probably exact pick odds being the better bet there. But
yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to be laying $3 and have the Saints come up at eight and him be there. I would not be a bet that I would want to live through on the over for sure.
Well, remember there was a day, right, during the NFL season where Mendoza was the first shot to go number one and Bain was second, right?
Yeah, I have a ticket in my DraftKings account right now. Bain like 70-1 to be the number one pick in the draft.
There's still hope, baby. Can still happen. Got 7 days. What about? I've only seen a few mocks with this, and again, my skepticism about mocks. Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love's teammate at Notre Dame, going late first round. Does anybody believe that's going to happen?
I think the likelihood is increasing because I think a lot of the guys that we expected the Seahawks to be drafting aren't going to be there anymore. I would love that.
Yeah, because running backs are 1.5 also.
I have no
right?
idea, honestly.
Yeah,
it's so late.
Seattle's kind of the only out, though, which is tricky, right?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the only out. That's exactly right.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to live through this now. I have, with the DK boost, I have Oberg at 36-1, round one leader, and he's in the house, solo lead at 8-under, and we got Fowler on the course at -5, and Shoffley 4-under on the front nine. Oh, great.
It seems a little off topic, but I hear you.
My buddy who I'm in my one and, or a big one and done with, he just sent me the LFG, and I'm like, what? Yeah. And he's like, Oberg, and I'm like, oh, crap, here we go.
Let me guess, a week after you needed him to do something? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have him top 20 last week. Good. But bogey's final two holes. It was good. The team to draft Jeremiah Love. Yeah. I'm looking at the Kalshi stuff right now. Where if our suspicion is right with Arizona, you can buy the yes at 12 cents on Jeremiah Love to go to
that's fun. Finals. That's fun. Mm-hmm. The Reuben Bain kind of question I wanted to touch on real quick. I feel like the timing of the report and the way it was digested and how quickly things move in sports is probably fine for him. Like, I doubt it in the end. Like, if that's the sort of thing that comes out on like the day before the draft, everybody's like, well, now this is a PR mess if we do this, so it's a risk. The fact that it's been like digested over the course of a week and change, it probably means that it's not going to impact his where he lands. The bigger issue is that, you know, T-Rex arms, T-Rex. But even more. And by the way, the T-Rex arms thing is kind of fascinating to me because it sounded like there was a bust in, or at least a change in the way they measured arms at the combine this year.
That's right.
And like a whole bunch of guys like had
measured differently, right?
Vastly different measurements at the combine than at their pro days. And it was like, how is this possible? His arms didn't grow 3 inches. What the hell? And I was like, well, they were measuring it from a different part of their kind of instead of the spine, like the clavicle or something. I don't even know what they did, but whatever the case was, there was something funky about the measurements at the combine, apparently.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
Then
we had uniform arm measurements, Drew. I don't know what happened. I do wonder. not to interrupt you, but just not to break your flow, but I'm always fascinated by that kind of stuff. The man played football. You saw him play football. Why do you care about this? You would make an evaluation based on arm length? Maybe you would. I don't know. Who's the offensive lineman that had the short arms, though, that really they're worried about? Was it when the kid, who's the kid in New England? Yeah. Will Campbell.
Will Campbell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that didn't affect his draft position. He went fourth after all.
I was going to say too about Bane. Doesn't this have all of the earmarks of a team in the mid to late first round throwing this out there in the hopes that he does slide to them?
I mean, it could. It also could be like a team that is ultimately wants to take him was like, we need to get this out here now so it gets, so that the 24-hour news cycle digests it and people forget. Yeah, but like it kind of, to me, it has the whiffs of like, he's going to be sitting there for the Chiefs at 9 and he's going to be your defensive rookie of the year unanimous kind of winner. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what it feels like to me. And that doesn't help you with an 8.5, obviously, but yeah.
I'm sorry, Drew. I interrupted you though. You were flowing. I can't remember what.
Yeah, it's just I don't think that the Bane off the field stuff is going to affect how he gets drafted in this class. It's going to be much more of like, it's a really crowded top 7, and then all of a sudden it's a really like there's not a lot of outs, you know, and especially if something weird happens like. And Luke, I feel like you say this every year, and you're right, which is that like when you're playing numbers that low under, like the Saints doing something insane, like taking who is the wide receiver you mentioned? Tyson, right? Like the Saints taking Tyson, and like every under you have that single digits, or, you know, 10, 9, they're all dead.
Yep.
Because it's
yep.
just like one surprise and you're cooked because there's just no more outs.
Yeah, which is what happened a couple of years ago with the Will Levis.
Yeah, almost happened with Banks last year. I had a huge, huge book on Banks, and
yep.
I was like, "Oh my God, we're running out of outs," because there was a couple surprises. Yep. And thank God he went. But yeah.
All right. Well, listen, this is the history of NFL drafts for bettors. For those who are new to this stuff. About 4 or 5 years ago, that kind of area, we were all crushing it. I mean, like 8-1s and 9-0s for those of us who were betting it those days. Then the mere mortals, not the Luke Swains of the world like myself. I remember getting saved by Derek Stingley Jr. going third. That like kind of saved one of my drafts. Joe Alt saved my draft going to the Chargers last year at 5. And the one before that, I think was a losing one for me, which is the first one, right? Where it's like, oh man, this isn't an ATM machine anymore. So that's kind of where we are with this, right? And I think that's kind of a reflection of most people, where it hasn't been quite the Luke has had great success, I know, year after year. I know you had one year where you didn't necessarily crush it as well. It might have been the same year where I lost. But that's where we are, and it's just getting harder and harder to even find them, you know, where
we're looking. The Levis year, if I had not covered my ass with Anthony Richardson unders that year, I would have lost like 40 or 50K on the draft. it was going to be like, you know, wow, I need to reassess my life type of experience if Richardson hadn't covered for me.
What's so sad about this is my pinned tweet on Twitter is all the way back in 2018. So before legalization, and the previous William Hill administration, as fucking corrupt and as fraudulent as they were, they gave you so many draft props. They tried to screw you on them afterwards, right? Which is why it's a pinned tweet, because I go through that whole thing about trying to get the money. But at least they let you do this, right? And it's just like I'm wistful about those days, you know, but
I don't understand. People are so starved for football, college football fans, NFL fans. Everybody's hungry right now, or thirsty or whatever. Give them water. They'll dump it on baseball and basketball playoffs. I promise you. Like they're still going to be reloading their accounts in August. Don't worry, guys. Like this isn't going to, you know, affect the bottom line. Treat it like customer acquisition, for crying out loud.
Absolutely.
Give the people water. They're thirsty.
I'm willing to make that the last word, unless we have any other bets that we wanted to share that we haven't thought of, but I think we've got through it all. Let that be the last word. Luke Swain, at Vegas Refund. Luke, if you have any releases between now and the draft, where do people go? To Vegas Refund to find that, or where do they go?
They can go on my website, which is go to my Twitter and you'll find it.
VegasRefund.com, yes? Okay, yep. We'll go there. Drew Dinsick, whale_capper on Twitter, Deep Dive, Bet the Edge podcast, Deep Dive, Dinsick Classic with Andy Molitor, and NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. Drew will be at the Derby next week.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Talk about that on the radio side also.
For Drew?
I'm gonna try to make sure we get Chief Wallaby in the race.
I think we're gonna get.
We'll be out there, Tanya Harding or Jeff Galooly on some. No, I'm not really, but
we don't need you in the race.
Yeah, that's right. That who's that horse that won the Wood Memorial this year? Holy smokes! Yeah. Out of the clouds, like yeah, we don't we can yeah. We can send him to the Pad Day Mile.
Yeah, Rudy Rodriguez has got the money. Yeah, you can hold out.
Yeah, no, I'm stoked for that. But yeah, for more draft content, I'll have hopefully maybe we'll get the tea between now and when I'm on with you on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and if we don't, I'll do a pod with Andy on probably Wednesday, where we'll air some more grievances and tell some more stories if we don't have EV bets.
That's right. Just go back into story time. All right. And Chris Felica at Chris Felica on Twitter. The Bear at Fox Sports Bear Bets Podcast. When's the next one, Chris?
Next one will be next Tuesday. And we're locating a draft analyst somewhere to have on. Don't know who it's going to be yet, but we're going to have someone on. And then I'll be on with you on Friday.
All right. Derby talk. Look forward to it. Hope you got something out of this. Hope that it leads to some bets, but specifically to some winning bets. That's the whole point of this. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Good luck with all your NFL draft bets a week away.